Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the R&R Studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, it's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, presented by Tequila Embajador.
Nation, welcome back to Raider Nation Radio, 9:20 a.m. on a Thursday. I'll be in New York starting tomorrow. I won't be hosting the show tomorrow. Our good friend Q Myers will be doing 4 hours, a double duty of Unnecessary Roughness, live from the Treasure Island Hotel at the Golden Sportsbook, Golden Circle Sportsbook in at the Treasure Island. So make sure you tune in to Q from 2 to 6 p.m. Lincoln, we were talking about, Zay Jones and, kind of a tough spot for him to be in, but he's such a professional. And I think that if there's anybody that's built to go ahead and respond to this moment, it's going to be Zay Jones.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think we got a guest on the line, don't we?
Yes,
don't
we do.
Let's move to him. We could talk about this a little bit later. But, yeah, I think he will be ready.
Absolutely. And we are going to go to the guest line right now and welcome in Dan Dugan, who covers the Giants for The Athletic. Dan, thanks so much for spending some time with us in the huddle. Really appreciate it. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, just walking my dog. Hopefully there's no background traffic, and it's starting to get a little cold here in the Northeast, so I got to keep my hands in my pocket.
Uh-oh. All right, well, thanks for the heads up. I'm leaving. I'll be in New York tomorrow, so thanks for the heads up on the weather. What the heck is going on?
Sweater.
Go ahead. Yeah, what's going on? If there's any way to kind of crystallize what is going on with the New York Giants, how would you go about doing that?
Oh, boy, that's a kind of broad question. You mean specifically with the COVID stuff or just the entire season?
It's just where the Giants are in the whole, kind of the whole scheme of things, yeah.
Okay, no, they have a crazy week going on here. They've had like a million false positive tests.
We're going to get to that.
All right. Bigger picture, they've had a lot of injuries. No one wants to hear that excuse, but it's been more than their fair share. Blake Martinez, their middle linebacker, is out for the season with a torn ACL. Jabril, one of their better safeties, he's out for the season with a torn ACL. And on the offensive side of the ball, pretty much if you touch the ball at some point for the Giants this season, odds are you've missed a game or at least missed time with some sort of injury. So that has definitely played a part. But they've also had chances to win games, and they've shot themselves in the foot, repeatedly. I'm sure you guys watched Monday night. The offsides and negate the big interception late. There's been just moments like that against Washington. They jump off sides on a field goal. The guy misses. Then he gets a second chance, and he makes it to win the game. So, listen, I've covered this team for my sixth season, and I've seen, pretty much every way a team can lose. And this Giants team is kind of continuing that tradition. Bad teams find a way to lose, and they just tend to prove that week in and week out.
Where are they with Daniel Jones? I know he's in his third season. I'm not sure he's distinguished himself in any real kind of a way. Where are they with their quarterback?
No, I think that's the problem, that we're sitting here, midway through his third season, and we don't know exactly where he is. I think they want him to be the guy, and I think it's sort of one of those things where, you can tilt your head and squint and say, oh, I see it, like it's there, and like there's a game like the Saints game, we say, oh, this is the guy. He just doesn't do it week in and week out. Like, I'm more of a skeptic than a believer. I think his ceiling is like you know, maybe a 12 to 15 range, you know, in terms of rankings of quarterbacks. I don't know if that's really what you should be striving for. I can understand why, you know, hey, he's young. Maybe he gets to that next level. We're midway through year three. I think you'd see more signs if that was to come. I think he has those moments like New Orleans. He's tremendous in terms of intangibles. But I don't know. I think the Giants put a ton of stock in that. I mean, there's a bunch of backup quarterbacks in the league who have great intangibles. I think that, you know, that only gets you so far. He just doesn't do it. He's also been in a bad situation. He has not had, you know, even an average offensive line in his 3 years. The skill position players have not been very good during his time. Like I said, a lot of them have been hurt. But again, I just think at some point you would see it more consistently than you have from him if he was really going to turn out to be, you know, quote unquote, the guy.
Well, Dan, where do you put the morale of this team right now? Almost halfway through the season, where do you think the feeling in that locker room is? Is it a disastrous season? Can they resolve? What are your feelings?
Well, it's funny. Logan Ryan, who's really kind of a team spokesman, leader, he was asked that question this week, and he basically said it's like in the middle. Like he's like, if I say I lie to you, you know, we just lost a heartbreaker. We're 2-6. I can't say it's high, but I will say like one thing that Joe Judge has going for him is they were 1-7 last year. And they didn't pack it in. They finished 5-3 in the last 8 games. You know, obviously they played the Chiefs down to the wire. I know the Chiefs have some flaws, but that's still a, you know, pretty impressive performance to go out there and play them the way they did. I think this is a team that's going to come apart at the seams. I think, you know, based on what they did last year and what they've done to this point this year, they're going to fight. They're not going to pack it in. I think that really is one of Judge's strengths. You'd like to see his strengths be winning games. But I do think he has done a really good job getting buy-in from the locker room. So, I don't think they're going to sit there and say, oh, you know, we're 2-6. Let's just pack it in. I think they'll play hard. I'm sure they'll be competitive on Sunday. And obviously, you got to just see where they're at in terms of talent level, because obviously the few games we've gotten away from them, I think that's more of a talent issue than an effort issue.
Speaking of Joe Judge, Dan, you know, it doesn't usually take too long for a head coach of a new team to kind of rally the support and get the fans behind them and getting everybody believing in the direction that he's pushing the program. I don't get the sense that that's been the case yet for Joe Judge. How steep is that hill that he's trying to push that ball up in that regard?
Well, it's actually crazy because I've never seen a better honeymoon period for a coach. Everyone loved him. You know, everything he said after he hired was really hit the right notes with the fan base. Because he came in after Pat Shurmur, who was really kind of like a milquetoast guy, Judge a little more, you know, East Coast in your face. I think that connected pretty well with the fan base. And then even last year, you figured he was the first-time head coach. You got the whole COVID debacle. And like I said, they finished strong. It was 6-10. It's not a great record, but, you know, I think everyone knew that they're in a rebuild here. There was a ton of goodwill built up. And he's kind of drained that reserve pretty fast here in year two. The fan base has totally flipped on him. There's just been some moments that lead you to wonder sort of what is his upside, because he doesn't call the offensive plays. He doesn't call the defensive plays. So if you're like the CEO-type head coach, you need to be great on like the game management things. And even, you know, start out week one, he tried to challenge a Broncos touchdown. And, you know, everyone knows you can't challenge scoring plays. And he kind of basically admitted he just is out of frustration. Like, and then there's some timeout mismanagement. There's just a lot of little things like that that don't sit well, again, when you're not, you know, the offensive play caller. So what are you hanging your hat on if you're not managing the game well? So, then, you know, and at the end of the day, honestly, this, you know, honeymoons end when you don't win. And you know, he's got 8 wins here in a year and a half. That's obviously going to, you know, run up any goodwill you build with the fans.
Well, what can you tell us about this defense so what we can look forward to? I mean, I thought they've had a pretty solid outing against Kansas City, negated a lot of their weapons, got some turnovers. What are your thoughts about this defense?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the hope for this team, you know, until maybe, I guess, all the offensive guys get healthy at some point. But the defense is what carried them last year, and I always kind of have to, like, you know, put an addendum when I say carried a 6-win team, because the offense was so inept last year that if the defense didn't play at the level it did, they would have won 2 games. I mean, they were 9th in scoring defense last year. They got up to a slow start this year, and it was a major disappointment because they basically brought everybody back. They went out and added Dory Jackson, who was really supposed to upgrade that, you know, cornerback 2 spot, and nothing was really gelling early in the year. They, you know, lit up in back-to-back weeks against Dallas and the Rams, but I think you're starting to see them turn the corner a little bit. Like, they completely dominated the Panthers 2 weeks ago, but, you know, I don't think they put a ton of stock into shutting down, you know, Sam Darnold. But what they think is the Chiefs, and I go, we all know the Chiefs are certain having their struggles, but offensively, it's still been pretty potent, and it was a great game plan. They totally took Kelce out of the game. even Tyreek Hill, you look at his box score, it's like he had 12 catches for like 90-something yards on 18 targets. I mean, I think he'll take, 6 yards a target for Tyreek Hill every day. So they did a really good job. I think Pat Graham is sort of the kind of star of this coaching staff team. I mean, people love him, the defensive coordinator. Like I said, it was a slow start this year, but it happened last year too, and then they started to hit their groove. Maybe that's happening again. So I think that, that's what's going to give the Giants hope that if they're going to knock off a team like the Raiders and they're going to Bucks coming up after that, it's going to have to be, with Pat Graham dialing up, the right game plan and pushing the right buttons, which he did last year in the second half. So, I think we'll see if he can repeat that this year.
We're talking to Dan Dugan. He covers the New York Giants for The Athletic, and you can follow him at ddugan21. Dan, the New York Giants are one of the blue blood organizations in professional sports, and specifically the NFL. They have a rabid, rabid, rabid fan base and following. I've seen some games recently on TV. It didn't look like MetLife was completely full. For somebody whose father was a diehard Giants fan and used to tell me, about the waiting list for season tickets and how, they would be willed, from family member to family member. I feel like, is it waning at all? And in terms of all that, where the Giants remain in kind of the hierarchy and their presence there in New York and New Jersey, has any of that taken a little bit of a hit with the lack of success recently?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's kind of, basically bottomed out. They had a stretch in the 60s and 70s where they referred to them as the wilderness years, and they're basically at that same depth right now, which, they're a little, they've had more recent success in the fact that, obviously they had the two Super Bowls, earlier this century, but, 2011, that's 10 years ago now, and they've made the playoffs once since then, haven't won a playoff game. I think the stat is still accurate because the Jets and the Giants both, won recently. I think they have the tied for the worst record since the start of the 2017 season. So this isn't like a small blip. We're in year five of them being, worse than the Lions, worse than the Browns, worse than all these franchises you're used to thinking is kind of the, the cellar dwellers of the league. So the enthusiasm is definitely low. MetLife, it's gotten ugly at points where, the first three and out that the Boo Birds are already out. That's one thing. The worst part is, in the fourth quarter with 10 minutes to go, people are streaming towards the exits because it's just, they haven't been putting a good product on the field. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the crowd would be like for a 1 o'clock start here. I don't know how well Raiders fans travel. And, they don't play in this area very often, so maybe they'll show up because that's probably been the biggest disgrace is that in a lot of these later season games, it's like Cowboys fans and Eagles fans overrunning it because the Giants fans are kind of checked out and they sell their tickets.
I never thought that I would see that, but here we are. Last question for you, Dan. Obviously, COVID-19 has been a prevalent story out in your neck of the woods with the Giants. What's the latest on that mess?
Yeah, so that's the mess I thought you were referring to. I know you're going big picture earlier. It's been crazy. They had, I think it was 13 positive tests on Tuesday, the rapid test, but then they turn around and retest all those, and only one turned out to be positive. You're doing the math, there's 12 false positives, and that trend has basically continued the past 2 days. Like I said, myself, I tested on Wednesday morning, got a positive, then did a rapid PCR test, all these things that, we've become experts on the last year. And thankfully, I'm all negative now, but, couldn't work yesterday. And so for me, that's one thing. Another thing for, like, Saquon Barkley, couldn't work yesterday. And then not only is he missing practice, he's also rehabbing an ankle injury, so he couldn't be in the facility for treatment. So there was probably an outside chance that Saquon was going to be back on Sunday, but he's missed the last 2 days of practice and treatment because he's on the COVID reserve list. I think that the hope or the expectation is that he might have a false positive and they can get that cleared up by tomorrow. But then you're talking, one day of practice potentially after missing 3 games. So I think a really long shot that he plays. They have a couple other guys in that same boat, the safety Xavier McKinney, who's been a every down player for them. And then one of Saquon's backups, actually, Gary Brightwell, a rookie, he popped on it today. So, again, maybe all these guys get sorted out and are cleared from the COVID list. But a guy like Saquon, like I said, is also dealing with the ankle. I think it's pretty unlikely that he plays. But it's really just been, sort of a thing that I think a lot of us kind of, hope to move on from. And now the Giants find themselves right back in the thick of it. They did virtual meetings all day on Thursday. So it's certainly going to, impact their preparation. Of course, the Raiders aren't going to give them any sympathy. You guys have plenty of turmoil of much higher stakes recently. So The COVID false positive doesn't rate quite as highly, but it definitely is, you know, has an impact on their preparation this week.
Yeah, no question. We keep thinking that we are putting it behind us, and then weeks like this happen for the New York Giants, and it's just a reminder that we aren't. Dan Dugan, thanks for spending some time with us in the huddle.
Thanks, Dan.
We truly appreciate it. We'll see you in Cole, and a reminder to definitely pack my jacket. That's for sure. I appreciate the heads up. Thanks, Dan. I really appreciate it, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Dan.
You got it. That's Dan Dugan from The Athletic. You can follow him at ddugan21. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. on a Thursday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny and Lincoln on the Sam and Ash text line at 69187 or tweet them at Vinny Bonsignore and at LKennedy72. This is In the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Well, Lincoln, after talking to Dan Dugan, I don't have any clearer picture of the New York Giants than before, and not that he didn't, you know, wasn't great in that interview, but I think that there's just a lot of questions with the New York Giants, and it probably really does start with that quarterback who has not distinguished himself, and as Dan said, you know, going into year three now, almost at the halfway point of year three, and they're still not quite sure if he's the guy. That's probably a good idea that he's not the guy.
Well, first of all, it always starts with the quarterback. I mean, you have a quarterback, you have a chance, and that's sort of the popular sort of premise around football. It doesn't matter the level, but you know, when you take a chance, and there were a lot of people who questioned when they drafted Daniel Jones, where they get – it was almost like the Chicago Bears when they took Mitch Trubisky, you know, just how far is he going to go, how far he's going to lead it. But to be fair to Daniel, he hasn't been surrounded by a whole lot of talent. As Dan talked about, that offensive line, they've been trying to piece it together. They haven't done a great job at doing that, addressing that. And if you don't have protection, you really don't have a chance. You put a lot of stock into Saquon Barkley, and you know how devalued running backs have become over the years. Not to say that Barkley isn't capable, but he's been hurt as well. So when you're without him, where are you going? And they tried to address the wide receiver problem, and you've just got a ton of guys injured. Now when you complicate that with the COVID restrictions and the false positives and, you know, the question of the capable coach. I mean, there's a lot of intangibles that are working against the Giants.
Yeah, there are. And, you know, but just as, you know, nobody feels sorry for the Raiders. And as Derek Carr expressed yesterday, nobody cares, you know, what you're going through. You know, you got to line it up on Sunday and they're going to give you their best effort. And likewise, and that's the same way for the Raiders. The Giants are just the latest team in their way. And, you know, I've stressed this quite a bit, Lincoln, in spite of everything that's been going on. This Raiders team has shown a lot of resiliency and a lot of the traits that have been missing these last couple of years. And I go back to the defense, Lincoln, and, you know, the improvements that they've made in terms of personnel. In the improvements that they've made in terms of Gus Bradley and the staff that he's brought in, from the coaching standpoint, the messaging standpoint, player acquisition standpoint. I know Gus had a big say along with Mike Mayock in the defensive additions this year from the draft to free agency. But it just looks like such a competent group now and capable group. And these last 2 weeks, or these last two games, I should say, you know, the fact that they gave up touchdowns on the opening drive, but then didn't give up points again until the third quarter, gave that offense a chance to build big leads, insurmountable leads, as it turns out. It's something that the Raiders haven't shown an ability to do in a while, but I'm here to say that I don't expect any of that to really change. They're not going to play perfect every week, but this is a unit I think that the Raiders offense and the Raiders can kind of hang their hat on at this point.
You know what's been fun to watch is that it seems like every week, especially when the Raiders are having success, there's someone that comes out and plays at a higher level, just has a standout game. You talk about Max Crosby reinventing himself and how that's paid off for him. You talk about the addition of Yannick Ngakoue, and, you know, he's defensive player of the week a couple weeks ago. So guys like that. Then you go on the inside and you have, you know, Solomon Thomas or Quentin Jefferson or Darius Vailon, you know, playing well. And then you talk about the secondary. And of course, the receivers that you have, you know, Brian Edwards has a standout game. You know, Alec Ingold gets involved in the game. It's really been a total team effort. And since I've started covering this team many moons ago, it's been refreshing to see that it's not the same old, or when another team comes out and takes them away. Like, we're going to bracket Darren Waller, so what are you going to do? Well, then you have to have the rise of Hunter Renfrow, or someone else has to come out. And they've been able to do that. And you know, I said it the last couple of weeks, and I still hold true. It was, especially when you go back to that Philadelphia game, it was Derek Carr's accuracy that, to me, made him stand apart. It stand out. Now, I'm not saying that he's a quarterback who's going to, you know, lead you to the promised land of Super Bowl or stuff like that on his arm, but I do know this. If he continues to play like that, the Raiders are going to be hard to beat, because with that accuracy and his decision-making and these weapons, that's an offense that can score touchdowns.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, I think the offensive line also showed improvement. And so that allowed some things to happen offensively that weren't necessarily happening earlier in the season. The run game was better, taking more chances downfield, you know, improved. You had more time to work with. But you're right, the accuracy was incredible. And, you know, going back to that defensive side of the ball, Lincoln, you're right. It's not just Max Crosby, and it's not just been Unique Ngakoue. On a week-to-week basis, there's been players that have contributed big time, and that's what you need. You can't, you know, it is a team game. There's 11 guys on the field on any given play defensively, and then, you know, backups as well. You know, you've had situations where Solomon Thomas had two sacks in a game. Darius Vailon, I believe, had two sacks in a game. Guys have come up with interceptions, fumble recoveries. You've had your mainstays, no doubt about it, like Denzel Perryman and Casey Hayward. Corey Littleton's playing at a much higher level, but what do you feel like the key has been? Is it just better talent, or how much of an impact would you say Gus Bradley has had in that operation?
I think he's had a big impact. I also think that Ron Miles, the defensive backs coach, has had a big impact. That entire defensive staff has had a big impact, because they've given a sense of purpose to everybody who was on this team before they got there. And before they got here, and then, of course, who they added, you know, Casey Hayward Jr., you know, Denzel Perryman, you know, giving Corey Littleton a way to become involved and to get him active in the defense has been refreshing to see. I mean, there's been a lot of contributions across the board, and especially drafting well. I mean, I think Nate Hobbs and Trayvon Mori are good additions. So there's been a number of places, the number of guys that you can attribute to, but it starts at the coaching. The coaching came in and gave them a sense of purpose, created a system where they can excel in. And I've always believed, for it doesn't matter what the athletic level or which of the sports you're talking about, the less thinking the players have to do out there, the better off they are, because they can move faster. And so, you know, especially when you're playing defense, it could be as simple as see ball, go get ball, but you have to know your responsibilities, especially when you play a lot of zone defense the way they do. And it's, you know, I've come to respect and appreciate what Gus Bradley's defense is, that, you know, it's a bend but don't break mentality. I mean, you have some time where you're giving up chunks of yards between the 20s, but as you get in the red zone, you get closer, it gets condensed and makes it that much harder to get in. And, like, when you have guys that are playing at an all-time level, one of their better levels, you look at a Denzel Perryman, and, I mean, to me, he's on his way to becoming All-Pro this year.
Yeah, and what did they say? What did he say right off the bat? Everything that he does is kind of predicated on those four guys up front getting to the quarterback. And what have they done, Lincoln?
they've been block eaters on the run plays, and they've been getting to the quarterback on other ones. So, yeah.
What would you like to see improve defensively?
That's a good question. The short to intermediate zone, I would like to be more efficient and effective. I get a little cringeworthy when you see big chunks of yards between the 20s, you know, marching downfield. You know, it's a little disheartening when you have something like a third down and 12, and I'm expecting the defense to get off the field, and you give up 13 yards. Or a fourth and 22, and you give up 23 yards. You know what I mean? Those are the type of things that are a little discouraging, that I expect more out of this defense. But it also comes with a grain of salt. Like I said, they haven't given up a whole lot of touchdowns, but they also have to have an answer for what plagues them. And when you face the Chargers again, or anybody who has that ability, especially when you face the Chiefs, you got to have an answer for Travis Kelce and their dual tight ends, their 12 personnel, because you didn't have one against the Chargers. And the Chargers tight ends ate up the defense. They scored a majority of the touchdowns. I think that you have to have an answer because that's going to be the way people are going to attack it. The middle of the field, there's plenty of real estate. And whether you're playing using penalties and defensive chips or you don't have a place where your safeties, they can't cover the or linebackers who can't cover the tight ends, the longer and faster tight ends, you got to have an answer when it comes. And I think they've been kind of trying to figure that out over the last couple of weeks, what they're doing with their dime defense. It's not there yet. But it's, you know, with the acquisition of Desmond Trufant and trying to make other ways, I'm seeing them play with a little bit more to see if they can get things installed and go work with good momentum.
By the way, we're monitoring the Deshaun Watson – or the Deshaun Watson. We are monitoring that, no doubt about it, but also the Deshaun Jackson situation. He went unclaimed on waivers. I wasn't surprised at that. I had mentioned these last couple of days that contract was prohibitive for a team that was thinking about claiming him. And so now they shied away from that because any team that would have claimed him off waivers would have been obligated to that contract, Lincoln. Now he's a free agent, able to sign at the veteran minimum contract with his next team. And then the Rams would pick up the remaining, you know, part of the contract. So it would be, you know, whoever signs Deshaun Jackson is going to get him at a nice price.
Hey, Vinny, what's the veteran minimum these days?
If you give me a second, I will look at that.
The reason why I ask and why you're trying to find it out is I remember as a player when we were starting to talk about that, those are the guys that had 10 years in. There was a baseline salary, and that's what we mean when we talk about the veteran minimum. Man, and I remember when they first started talking about it many moons ago. I was already out of the league, but they were talking about if you've been in for 10 years, the you can't go under like $1 million or whatever it is. I know
right.
It has to go up since then, but I was just always curious. I was curious as to what it was these days.
I'm seeing $660,000.
Oh, really? I thought it was more than that.
Right, and I think that.
There's a 10-year minimum, and then there's a vested veteran minimum. To become a vested veteran, you have to be in the league at least 3.5 years, right?
Yeah, right. I don't know how it applies in this kind of a situation mid-season when you get cut or released. You know, the signing team, if they're obligated to meet any kind of, the 10-year guy.
Yeah, usually, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I was saying usually when it comes to somebody getting cut mid-season, if they've already played 3 games, the team is on the hook for their full salary if they don't get picked up. But if they get picked up as a free agent off of waivers, you know, it's natural that it's contract. But there's a settlement price if they don't have an employment, so you're not cut and dry, just high and dry. But if another team picks up, what they created in the CBA is that you can't get paid twice.
Right.
So, you know, you can't, you know, for the Raiders pick them up, you can't get paid by the Rams and the Raiders. It's one or the other.
Yeah, I still think, though, that in this case, because just how things were being expressed to me by a certain team, if you look back to like last year, zero credited seasons, it would be $610,000. One credited season, $675,000. Two credited seasons, $750,000.
That's what
three,
I'm there. Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. 825. Up to 7+ credited seasons is $1 million.
Yeah, there it is. That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah. But I do think because, you know, he signed his contract and that becomes, you know, that's guaranteed. His contract is not just
well, yeah, depending on the language in it.
Right, and yeah. A lot of that contract is, like we were talking, this is what was kind of, you know, scaring teams away a little bit, was the escalator clauses in that contract. That's what I think that the Rams would still be obligated to, and it was up to like $4 million, something along those lines. So whoever does sign him, as it's been explained to me, and I'll double check, you know, he'll get that, it'll be for that, you know, 7+ credited seasons minimum, $1 million. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that also means that'll be prorated because we're in week 8 now.
Right.
So we'd have to look at that. But the long and short of it, as it's been explained to me, the Rams who signed him to that contract now become obligated and on the hook for those escalator clauses, all those type of things that could kick in depending on where he goes. And if he gets a lot of playing time, some of those are going to get, you know, kicked in. And some of them are, you know, on the active roster, there's $100,000. If you're doing this, there's $1 million, you know, all those type of things that can add up. And I think that who ends up being on the hook for that are the Rams.
Well, so, I'm curious, are we up against it? Almost a break, but I'm curious.
You got time.
Was curious to see who, knowing there are two main names that are out there that are floating out there. And that's DeSean Jackson and Odell Beckham Jr.
I was just going to bring up Odell, but
I was going to ask your take because I knew you were going to throw it at me pretty soon. Your take on Odell, would he be somebody that you would be interested in?
He would, and but let's first go to Mike in Chicago if he's still on.
I'm sorry,
let's talk to Mike in Chicago real quick, and then for sure let's talk about Odell.
My bad, Mike.
I'm good, man. I mean, I just love listening to you guys, and I'm not just talking off the top of my head. I live in Chicago, so I've been listening to sports talk radio for years. But you guys, love the way you guys, it's two grown men with experience talking about stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Appreciate that.
A couple of things. Then I get excited when I get on. I forget what I want to say. First, I am so impressed. I am so impressed with the head coach. I just love the way he presents himself at press conferences, man. And he is so freaking detailed. The way he explained stuff this week, I was like, damn, dude, that's good. And he captures your attention the way he presents himself and the language he uses. And he seems to be really invested in the well-being of the players. This guy you just interviewed, Vinny, describe how you described the Raiders a couple of years ago, how they look a couple of years ago.
Right.
It was like, they're just not very good right now.
Right.
They just can't get stuff right, man. So I don't see them losing this game because the way this team is now, that Jet defense, that Jet offense is not going to do much against the Raiders defense, period.
They shouldn't because it's actually the Giants, not the Jets.
My bad.
All good, man. It's all good. They're basically the same team these days.
But I mean, again, all props to you guys, man, and just keep up the good work.
Thanks, we appreciate it, and we're just having fun with you on. Because, like I said, Lincoln. These days, it's hard to distinguish between the Jets and the Giants right now. They're just
Jets have been a dumpster fire for quite some time. The Giants,
I don't get it. I don't understand it. Getting back to Odell and Mike, we really appreciate the call. Getting back to Odell, I think that at this point, especially everything that's kind of happened, and if you could. Facilitate some, a trade like that, an acquisition. Well, I don't even know. It wouldn't be a trade at this point. I mean, I'm wondering if the Browns are just at the point where it might be time to just part ways. I mean,
if you're the Browns, you obviously got to entertain trade requests because you want to get off the books some of this money. You see what I'm saying?
To do that. You would have to wait till the end of the season.
Yeah, because the trade deadline's over with, right?
Right. And they've said, it sounded like doing some research into this. It sounded like, they basically told the players, the coaching staff told the players that he's not going to be around anymore. He's not going to play. He's not going to be at practice. So he's sort of in purgatory, mandated by the team. So they just told him basically stay away. And so now he's in limbo. Obviously, he's getting paid, so that helps. Yeah. But he's in playing limbo. And how fair is that to him?
The problem that you have from an administrative standpoint is that right now you're probably trying to figure out how you can get from under this much lost money, lost revenue. So do you say it's conduct detrimental to the team? Do you know what I'm saying? Some of those misnomers that help void some of the money. There's been money that's been paid out. They've taken on that contract they had from the Giants. So there's no doubt there's money going into the season. And he's already on the roster after the third game, the active roster after the third game of the season. So he's supposed to be entitled to this year's salary. But, somehow you got it. There's ways for the NFL. They've done it all the time. There's way for them to cut their losses, take the slap in the face if they really want to get from somebody. I just think I agree with you, Vinny, that at this particular junction, he's more of a distraction to the team than anything else, because now everybody has to be faced with these questions about Odell Beckham Jr.
And just to clarify, he's in the middle of a $14.5 million contract this year. Mm. Next year, it's $13.7 million, juicy. And the year after, it's $13.7 million. So that's a lot of lettuce for somebody that's, you know, been a little bit spotty. But if you could figure out the money end of it, it would be a interesting thing to ponder for the Raiders. And here's one of the reasons why I say that. There's a couple of things to consider, I think, if you're the Raiders. Would it be another Antonio Brown? I'm going to throw that to Lincoln Kennedy first. Would you be worried that this could be another Antonio Brown? I don't necessarily see them in the same kind of light, but I'll defer to you on this one.
I think you have to have it in your mind, someplace in your mind, because you've seen throughout his career how he's been a distraction off the field. You see what I'm saying? So you have to take it in consideration. And because Antonio Brown is still fresh, it wasn't that long, that far removed, would you be willing to take another chance on someone like that, that might be like that? I think he'd be a tremendous asset. That's why you got to weigh the options. I mean, he could play ball. You know, he could catch, but so yes. Could Antonio. He just had a couple screws loose.
Yeah. I don't think Odell has those kind of screws loose, but, you know, it would definitely be a gamble in that regard. Now, here's the other part of it. This is a conversation that we wouldn't even be having, a week ago, because I think the Raiders' wide receiver group was set for a while. Unfortunately, now you have to entertain those thoughts about how do you now go find a piece that you were counting on for you know the next X amount of years. And I want to say this, and we're going to talk about this. There's another player to keep in mind here, and that's Davante Adams with the Green Bay Packers, who will be a free agent next year, and is a really good friend with Derek Carr. Do you just wait it out maybe this year and kind of circle back to it in free agency and see if maybe Davante Adams is a viable candidate next year? Here's one thing, way of looking at it. Odell, if you were able to get him this year, let's say he gets cut and the Raiders sign him. Now you have that wide receiver position fairly set, and you can move on to other parts of your team that you want to improve. But, you know, you might be able to get Davante for less money, too, and be able to do other things as well. So we're going to talk about that when we get back. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio 920 AM on a Thursday.
No one gets you closer to the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've liked Dylan Stoner from the minute that we signed him. So, and we evaluated him. Again, we sometimes talk about as a coaching staff, this is the guy that the scouts brought to us, and he is who they said he was. So we're excited to keep him on our team and to not lose him, to be honest with you. So he's had a good week this week. But he's looked good on the practice squad leading up to this elevation. So, you know, it's an opportunity. Again, it's an opportunity for Dylan Stoner. He's put in a lot of hard work, and he's had a good week.
Dylan Stoner, who is now on the active squad. The Raiders were down to three wide receivers. Dylan Stoner makes it four. We'll see if any other moves are coming. Whether it's before the game on Sunday or next week, we'll see where all of that is headed. But as we look at the game on Sunday, Lincoln, there's a winnable game for the Raiders that they need to go get in order to get to 6-2 and stay in first place in the AFC. But there's obviously going to be some things that they have to do. What's your number one key to the Raiders winning this game on Sunday?
Oh, control the inside presence of these defensive tackles for the Giants. I think they've got some holes, as I said before, that you can hit with the run game. But the big thing is you're going to have to control the inside presence of these defensive tackles. I think these guys can get some push up front. You really had to negate that to allow Derek and time, not only run game, but also Derek time in the passing game to look downfield.
And that is that falls on the shoulders of Andre
your guard,
James,
your centers, yep,
John Simpson, and Andre, yeah, excuse me, Alex Leatherwood. So we'll start there. All right, so the Raiders check that box off. Where do you go next?
Oh, continue to establish a run game. Get it further, develop it with what you have in place. If this is going to be your offensive line going forward, you need to know what they can do and what they can do well. And you've seen a little sample size over the last two games, but coming back off of a bye, it's always hard to get things restarted. So you want to continue to progress that and add to that. And understanding that it's going to be highly important when you get into the red area, the red zone, that you be able to run the ball and run the ball effectively. So you have to establish that sort of format as well.
Giants' offense has been spotty, to say the least. We don't know what the status of some of their key players, specifically Saquon Barkley, their great running back. But nevertheless, they'll have a next man up mentality, as NFL teams always do, and the Raiders can't sleep on whoever lines up behind their quarterback. So defensively, what do the Raiders have to focus on, and what's the key for them being able to neutralize
there Giants will offense? Be opportunities for the Raiders front four to create pressure like they've done all season. Daniel Jones is a capable quarterback, so look for some RPOs, look for some option style plays. And what I mean capable is he's capable of running. He's not, you know, stiff like Ben Roethlisberger. So he does have some ability. So you have to prepare for that. But there are ways for you to generate pressure with your front four. I don't think you need to blitz all that much because you can play coverage on the back end. You'll just wait for somebody to make mistakes. But there'll be some opportunities for you to get to the quarterback.
By the way, Mike White, not the old coach Mike White, who I think Lincoln knows who White.
Mm-hmm.
Mike White, the quarterback for the New York Jets. I don't know, man. He's making his case. He just threw another touchdown pass. It is Thursday night, so there's Thursday night football. Colts now are tied up with the New York Jets. Very quickly, there's a situation where the New York Jets drafted a quarterback second overall. He's hurt right now, and Mike White lit it up last week. A lot of it was, you know, taking advantage of what the defense was giving him. But tonight, he's driving the ball downfield and just tied the game up. If you're a team, all right, and you have the second pick in the draft and it's a quarterback, he goes down. All of a sudden, some guy comes in and just starts lighting it up. How disciplined do you have to be to make the right decision in that case? And what's the right decision, Lincoln?
What do you mean, how disciplined do you have to be to make the right
decision? I mean, this guy's making a case for himself. Like, if he continues to play like this,
You didn't draft a guy number two for him to watch.
Yeah. There's no doubt. But
See, that's the thing. That's the thing that separates it from college to pro, because you can make a situation like Oklahoma did with their quarterback where he was ineffective and was struggling. They bring in a true freshman, and he goes on to lead them, and you make a change. You can do that. Business-wise, no. You didn't draft Zach Wilson for him to sit on the bench and watch, you know, somebody who's relatively unknown become the face of the franchise. You'll take the winning right now, but most coaches have the format that you can't lose your position due to injury. And so it's not something that I think Zach Wilson did wrong. He just got injured. And so there's really no argument there.
I'm watching a clip right now where White throws a touchdown pass, and they flash over to Zach, and he's giving like, "Yeah, good, all right," you know, on the sidelines with the clap and everything like that.
Oh, he'll be his biggest cheerleader. It is awkward, but at the same point, yeah. Look, we remember last year when Derek went down with the groin injury, right, and when Marcus Mariota came in there and did what he did. You saw how fast Derek got back, right? <It's> not-
We did indeed, and never also though underestimate New York's need to turn a story. So trust me, if he plays well in this game again, and they beat the Colts, it'll be and he plays well in the process, it'll be interesting to see what the headlines look like, because they can, you know, and fans will be, you know, fans are like,
yeah.
you know, they're like, "Who? We just want the guy that's going to help us win."
That's exactly right. And you know how bad, how ruthless some New York media can be, and the fans follow suit. So yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. All right. So last question for you, Lincoln.
Yeah,
as we peek ahead to Sunday, and I'm really looking forward to just being able to focus on football. It's been a draining week. For a lot of different reasons, obviously, and it's part of the job, and we got to do it. And it you don't feel good about it, though, to be honest with you, Lincoln. And I know you probably share those sentiments too. And so Sunday is a chance to get back to focusing on football. Thankfully, what do you expect to see on Sunday when the Raiders take the field against the Giants?
I think there'll be a little bit of a slow start. I don't think they'll light it up really that much in the first quarter. Do a lot of ball movement. I think the Giants, if they're about themselves, they're going to try to keep away from the Raiders' offense, knowing how prolific it can be and how good it can be. So it'll be a little bit of a time of possession. It'll be a little bit of a slow start. But then I eventually think in the second quarter, the Raiders start to create some separation and put the pressure on the Giants. I totally expect this team, the Raiders, to beat them. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I think it'll be a good game where the second half is truly in the Raiders' favor and the Giants are trying to play catch-up.
Well, we will find out in just a couple of days. Lincoln, safe trips to safe trip back, you know, to New York and back. I'll see you in New York on Sunday. Actually, New Jersey. I keep saying that.
It's DeMond, all the same.
Yep, true. DeMond Cotton, thanks for everything that you do at home base. Yep, appreciate it. Thank you to all the callers, all of our guests this week. Remember, I will be traveling tomorrow, so not going to be part of the show. We won't be doing a In the Huddle tomorrow. However, Q Myers has got us covered. He'll be doing 4 hours of Unnecessary Roughness live over at the Treasure Island, the Golden Circle Sportsbook. So join him there tomorrow. Get set up for the big game on Sunday. We appreciate everything. All the listeners, you're why we do it. We will be back at it Monday, 4 to 6 p.m. In the Huddle, brought to you by Tequila and Vodka. Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.